Ron and Anian.
I've said it for years. We've been talking about it for a very long time. And it's something I felt, 20 years ago when I saw where computers were taking over cars, that there was going to be a shortage of mechanics. But now it's sort of sticking right in our face.
We are all, by any practical definition of the words, foolproof and incapable of error.
The Car Doctor.
If you look nationally, it's 76,600 annually. And we're just talking about cars. I tried to narrow this down to the art, because you can go all kinds of directions with mechanics. This is just the automotive technician who's working on family cars in the garage.
I can see you're really upset about this.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now,
this mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
Here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Hello and welcome. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's 24-7 phone number, 855-560-9900. Call, leave a message. If there is no answer, and sometimes even if Tom's here, there is no answer, 855-560-9900 is a 24-7 phone number, justifies and leaves a message, and Tom will call you back and put you in the next queue for the next live broadcast. We are live starting out on the radio network through our affiliate chain, Saturday afternoons 2 to 4 p.m. East Coast time here in the continental United States. I have to qualify all that now. It used to be a lot easier, 25, 26, 27, how many years? You know, Tom, we didn't talk about how it's, I think we have another anniversary coming up soon. I just realized that. I counted on my fingers, toes, and
yes,
and
the end of the month.
End of the month.
I think it's the 27th. I'll have to take a look back.
But we're on air how many? We're on air six or seven independent, and then 1991, January. See, for me, I look at January 2nd, 1991, which is when I first started. So that makes it 91, 2001. Mm-hmm. Is it?
28 years.
28 years. Two more years, I get to retire. So we're going to Sizzler.
And you know, you're only 39 years old. That's the amazing thing.
I don't understand it. I just, you know. You know what the funny part is about this radio show? Excuse me a minute, folks. I was picking up lunch today, right? And the guy in the deli, Paul, he's talking to me. And, you know, you kind of get to know people after a while. And he's, oh, is the shop closed today? Yeah, the shop's closed today. He goes, gee, you're buying a lot of food. Yeah, well, you know, it's, I got to feed the boys. I got to feed the crew. And he says, what crew? And I said, well, because I, you know, do a radio show on Saturdays. And he was like, you do a what? And I said, I do a radio show on Saturdays. You know, you kind of don't want to get into this. You don't want to have this conversation. So he goes, what do you mean you do a radio show? And I explained, I said, well, and I made the mistake. I forgot that there were other people in the deli. This was a bad thing, right? So there's a guy, two people back, with this 2012 Ford E250 van. And he comes up and he says, you're who? And I went, uh-oh. That's why I was late getting back, fellas. Right? And Paul never saw me do this, the owner. So this gentleman's telling me he's got this 2012 E250 and the brake pedal goes down low to the floor and Ford can't fix it and he's got all these problems. I said, Paul, you got a piece of paper? He gives me a piece of paper and I start drawing diagrams. Circles and arrows and, you know, 27 8x10 color glossy pictures, the whole thing. And I explained to the guy how the ABS system works, and the guy's just sitting there like this, you know, and he's looking back and forth, and you can see the sweat coming up, and he's just like, wow. And I said, who's working on this? He goes, oh, the Ford dealer. I said, oh, who's your technician? He goes, gee, I don't know. And I said, well, go in and have so-and-so or so-and-so work on it. They're the two sharpest techs up there, and they'll fix it and give them my diagram. And if they have any questions, just tell them you saw the Car Doctor, and they'll know how to find me, and we can talk about it. And I walked out. You know, when you do that, it's just like you can hear in the background, you know, who was that masked man, right? You know, you can hear, you know, you can hear it going off in your head because the guy goes, wow, it really makes sense. This will fix the truck. It's only been 7 months, and that's when I almost tripped walking down the stairs, and that's why you guys almost didn't get lunch back today. But it is kind of weird when that happens, but I do enjoy doing it. But yeah, 28 years on radio, I can't believe it.
And now Mike and I know why we had to enlarge the top of the door when you came in today.
Well, that was because I was carrying your sandwich.
No, it's because your head got bigger.
No. I really don't like to. You know what? I just like to be. I just want to be. Listen, you got a car problem. I'm glad to talk to you about it. I just don't want to. You know, but I thought about this guy with the van, and it kind of led me to my next Yellow Post rant. because I want to talk about why customers fail. Because one of the things I said to this gentleman was, I said, did you explain the problem to them in depth? Did you tell them at this point, now that they've done four-wheel brakes, pads, rotors, calipers, that, you know, somebody needs to take a test ride with you? Did you, you know, he said, no. And I said, why not? He goes, well, I didn't want to have them spend any more money. I don't want to run up the bill. But you've already got $4,500 into this truck. It still doesn't work. It's been out of commission off and on for the past 7 months. You're a carpenter. It would have been cheaper for you to buy a new vehicle at this point. He goes, yeah, but now I can't afford to. I've lost all that work. Why do customers fail? I'll tell you my story. 2005 Honda. Arthur came in yesterday. I've seen Arthur once before. He's a consumer. He's not a customer. You know, he was a customer once, and, you know, there's a line in the sand with me. There really is, where I'll go to a point, and then I'm starting to question what we're trying to do. I'm trying to fix your car and take care of it the best way I know how. 2005 Honda Arthur's got, and he wants to get the oil change. Can I bring it in on Monday? And I want you to look over the car and, you know, see what it needs. And I said, well, I can't really do it Monday. I could do it Tuesday. Well, I can't do it Tuesday. I said, what day can you do it? He said, I can either do it Monday or Friday. Okay, then I can do it Friday. I can do it a week from today, which was yesterday. It was Friday. Today's, we'll do it next Friday. He says, is that the soonest? Well, yeah, pretty sure. You know, if I can't, you know, and if I can't do it Monday and you can't do it Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, my guess is Friday's probably the next day. All right? Whew. I could say something, but I'm trying to be nice. So we book it for Friday and look the whole car over. Well, you know, gee, Arthur, let me look. You know, the last time you were here in July, so it's been 6 months, I said, you know, the car was due for trans fluid change and the car was due for coolant service. Do you want to do that? Yeah, how much is that? And I said, I added it up. I said, it's about $250, $300, something like that, whatever it is. Nah, just do the oil change. So we went from, I want you to take the car on Monday, change the oil, and look it over and do what needs to be done, to we're going to change the oil and do nothing, and we're annoyed that we're doing it on Friday because he can't do it on Monday because he wants what he wants when he wants it. All right? You know, I kept thinking about Abbott and Costello when he saw the monster. When I tell you I saw it. So he leaves. I go back to work. 15 minutes, the phone rings. That was Arthur. Hey, you know, I found somebody to do it on Monday. I'm going to cancel my appointment. Okay. Now, when his car breaks the next time, all right, and there's a problem, and, you know, he comes in and am I obligated to give him an appointment? Do I really have to work with somebody like that? I don't think so. And the point becomes, why do customers fail? Customers fail because they fail to look at the bigger picture. They fail to look, and I guess they tell you who they are, is really what it's all about, too. They show you the relationship they wish to have. And I get it. Somebody out there is saying, hey, Ron, you're a jerk. You're wrong. You know, it's mechanics are nothing but a bunch of ripoff artists. No, not really. There's good and bad on both sides of the counter. The issue is dealing with an automobile today. There is a very concise and exact manner in which it's supposed to be maintained. And it doesn't matter what your pocketbook says. If the car needs this, then you have to make that decision. And you have to choose whether or not you want to service and maintain that car properly to get the distance and mileage out of it that the manufacturer recommends. And I get it. Somebody out there is going, hey, Ron, I change my battery every 8 years and I never change my oil and the car's still going. Yeah, I know, but your definition of what's a car and what my definition of what's a car is probably two different definitions, all right? You know, when you look at a car and it comes into a shop and you've got to do it, you know, you've got to understand, too, that shops aren't stupid, not most of the ones I see, all right? We know, you know, I love it when somebody will bring you a car. They haven't been in a while. And it's, you're the only mechanic I trust, and you're the only guy I let work on my car. And by the way, I've got this check engine light on, and I need to get it diagnosed. And, you know, you haven't seen the person in 2 years. And you get in the car, and the oil change sticker is freshly removed. You can tell the glue is still on the windshield. And, gee, Arthur, why do you, you know, is this car due for an oil change? No, I just had it done. They forgot to put the sticker on. Because they went somewhere else. They've been going to somebody else. They were cheaper. They were quicker. They were faster. They had the appointment on Monday. And the person couldn't fix it, so then they bring it to you. Why do customers fail? I think it's a real timely topic. I think it's something that's got to get addressed. I think that And listen, free country, last time I checked, until Trump builds the wall. And, you know, it's still, you've got to decide what you're looking for in a mechanic and what you're trying to achieve. And if it's, you know, if it's speed and accuracy, if it's price, is it just overall how you were treated? But mechanics, the better ones, the smarter shops, are also looking for how the customers treat them. And after a while, it's going to come down to there's a shortage, and that's part of the issue why the guy couldn't get his oil change on Monday and to look the car over, because there's just too much other work going on. I don't know. Maybe it's me. Maybe customers fail because they're destined to fail, and maybe that's their lesson. Maybe it's me. Maybe I should have accommodated the guy and given up lunch on Monday and just done something different. I don't know, but it's an interesting thing that, you know what, it's a two-way street in terms of time. Time is the only thing that repair shops have to sell besides parts, and in that time is their knowledge and expertise. And how they handle it is a reflection on the shop as well as the customer. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, cruising back right after this. Don't go away.
Little GTO, you really look at mine. Three deuces and a four-speed.
Need advice on how to maintain that classic GTO? Ron is the guy. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Hey, let's get on over and talk to Steve in Vermont. Steve, what's on your mind? Ron and Anian at your service, sir.
Hi, Ron. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
I'm just following up on a conversation you had last week with a listener regarding the Toyota rusty frame issue.
Right, the truck frames, sure.
Yes, and you said that you were not really quite sure why Toyota, you know, didn't get as bad of a rap on such a huge problem, whereas perhaps, you know, General Motors and maybe Ford might
get
take
beat up
it
more.
Pretty
sure,
hard
absolutely.
For the problems
yep.
they've had.
Yep.
Yeah,
I believe that.
But my understanding, and I don't know everything there is to know about this, but my understanding is the way this whole thing with Toyota went down with these frames is that there was no recall, to my knowledge, you know, no National Traffic Safety Administration recall or anything on these frames. Is that Toyota recognized that they had a problem with the frames? They stepped up, they put a comprehensive plan in place where they either replaced the frames or they paid out some very generous buybacks for the whole trucks. So I think that maybe one of the reasons why they didn't perhaps get such a bad rap on it is because they really stepped up and took care of it.
Okay. I don't know if I think they stepped up, Steve. I think they did. They tried to. I believe, and I'd have to go back and research it, but I believe that some of the model years were recalled, and that led to the subsequent voluntary recall or the appearance of a voluntary recall by Toyota on the other parts. So here, let me give you a slightly different example, all right,
okay.
If I can. I've got a customer with a 2012 Toyota RAV4. It's got 93,000 gentle miles on it. Has the oil changed on a very regular basis, all right? Correct oil, good filter, the whole nine yards. About a year ago, in the 82,000-mile mark, she started consuming oil. This is a little 12 RAV4 four-cylinder. She started having an oil consumption issue. And when she went back and talked to Toyota, they said, yep, that's right. And the answer she got was that she needed rings. The rings were gummed up, and there were issues because Toyota has some issues, low-tension rings and oil control and yada, yada, yada. And it's really customer pay. And, you know, we're not talking about that one. You know, that just sort of went under the radar. And she's not the only one. I've got probably, 8, 9, 10, 12, whatever the number is. Toyota and Honda customers, both in a similar situation. Honda is recalling some of their vehicles and rebuilding the engines in-house in the dealer. Whether it's the quality of the oil, the filter, the frequency in between the changes, who knows, who cares? You know, and listen, I get what you're saying, all right? I think sometimes car companies do the right things, and I think sometimes they do stupid things. You know, it's in Toyota's case, I think the government was leaning on them for the frames, and, you know, it's let's make it a good PR day. Let's make it look like we're going to do this voluntarily. Go ahead.
Yeah, being up here in Vermont, of course, we have the salt factor. And so I can tell you that my local Toyota dealer here in my town, when they started this whole thing, they had a field that was as big as a football field, at least, full of trucks that people had turned in. Now, these were the ones that were going to, that they bought back.
Right.
Additionally, you know, they changed a lot of frames. And I'm a small business owner where my office is here. Happen to have a recycling facility down below me. So I have seen hundreds of these Toyota frames, the rusted ones, going down to the recycling plant down here by my shop. And the thing that baffled me about this whole Toyota frame issue was how many years it went on. It seemed as though they would continue to build trucks
with bad frames.
With bad frames,
yeah.
and continue to replace them.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't, that part of it, I just don't understand, because it's been many, many years that they've done this. And it's kind of a related sidebar. In my business, I have, I don't know, I think we've got about 18 GM pickups and vans, 3/4 ton vans, pickups and things like that. Now, I've had 4 or 5 of those that I've had to pull off the road because the frames were bad on them. No other reason why I couldn't continue to run them, but up here in Vermont, once the frame is bad, they're not allowed to be patched, so
right.
We have to take them off the road.
Right. How old were those? How old were those GM vehicles?
10, 11 years old.
Right. How many miles on them? About.
We are kind of a low mileage company. I'd say in that time frame, we've got about 110,000 on them.
Yeah, it's not enough. Right, and I agree. GM should do something, right? GM should step up to the plate. And, you know, their argument is, well, you know, it's 11 years old. Yeah?
Right.
Horse hockey.
And it's in Vermont. And,
right.
Now, I don't know if this is true either, but someone told me that whoever made the frames for Toyota also made them for the small GMs like the Canyons and those trucks. And I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I haven't heard that myself. You know, it's unfortunately, you know, and I'm a small businessman too outside of radio, and I try to do things, you know, both ethically and clearly and fairly, and I try to be fair to myself, and I try to be fair to the customer too. You know, but unfortunately in big business, they you know, it's dollars at a level that it's hard for guys like you and I to understand and relate to. And I think that's part of the issue too. You know, when I come back, I'm going to let you go, Tom. You can listen to the rest of it. When I come back, I'll tell you a story about the 04 Suburban that, you know, kind of baffles me too. It's sort of along the lines of these frames that are corroding. In any event, Steve, I appreciate the call. I'm Ron Anini, the Car Doctor. 855-560-9900. We're back right after this. Don't go away. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900 is the phone number. Give us a call, 24/7 number. Tom will put you in the queue. If we're not here, leave a message and we'll get back to you. I got the mail today. And what the heck is this? This came to me from Ford. You know, dear Ron, hope you're loving your 2018 Explorer. And it's a little pullout tab, comes out of an envelope. And it says, let's see, driving your new vehicle will even be more satisfying once you download Ford Pass. To help you find parking in select cities, fuel, and so much more, flip out the card to get started. It only takes a few minutes to register. More technology, right? And let's see here. Download, register, done. Scan this QR code. Activate your connection. Ford Pass. Amplify your ownership experience. Well, if the car works, I'll be thrilled. Schedule service appointments. Make car payments. Remotely unlock and start your vehicle. Now with voice commands through Ford Pass Alexa skill. Find, reserve, and pay for parking in select cities. The problem is it doesn't really tell you what to do after. I'm going to have to get a young person to show me this. Michael, what are you doing after the show today? We'll have to, you know, I'm going to hand this out to the boys in the control room. We'll get rid of that. You know, listen, because you look at that, right, and this is what kind of got me on this, right? I was reading a copy of Chevy Classics last night. I brought this with me to the studio today. And it's an article about the Texas Nomad. And I realize I owe you guys a story about the Suburban. Give me a minute. So there's a guy in Texas. He's got the most beautiful Dusk Pearl Nomad, 57, two-door. The Nomad was in its final year as a two-door model, starting with the 58 model year. The Nomad became a top-of-the-line four-door and sold in far greater numbers. Only 6,103 57 Chevy Nomads were built. And it talks about how in the mid-1950s, General Motors, anybody want to guess how much of the car market General Motors had in the 50s? What do you think, Tom? 50%? Yeah, right on the mark. GM had 50% of the car market, which now I haven't looked lately, but the last time I looked a while, I think it was like under 18%. They've lost that much. And you've got to think there's more cars on the road now, right? To make it a bigger deal. But the article goes on, and I was just reading it for a second. It's like it takes you back. The 56 and 57 Chevrolet passenger car lines were built on the foundation of the 55, and significant restyling made the 57 model easily distinguishable from its predecessors. However, styling changes alone are not all Chevrolet had to offer for this model year. Chevrolet's chief engineer, Harry Barr, who wrote the foreword to the 57 Chevrolet Engineering Features Manual, I'd like to have some of this literature right now, right? I mean, this stuff would be neat to read. Okay, stated, new 283 cubic inch displacement engine, cubic inch, new, I'll take two. Let me get my mouth working. New 283 cubic inch displacement V8 engine. Wow, a V8. The Turbo Glide luxury automatic transmission, a fuel injection system of revolutionary design, and numerous chassis improvements are illustrative of the mechanical advances available to the customer in 1957. Whew. And think of how simple those cars were, or were they that simple to work on? All right? And you look at the computer cars today and you say, I don't know. It doesn't make sense, but just neat stuff. I love this magazine. It just takes you back to a very, very simple time. We were talking a little bit before the break to Steve up in Vermont about the Toyota frames rusting out. And you know what? The car companies just, there's just strange things that happen. My 04 Suburban, 2004 Suburban, I think it's just got about 64,000 miles on it. And, you know, so think about 04. So was it 04, 14, the car's 16 years old, 17 years old, right? 04, it's just about 16 years old now. And, you know, here's a car that's been pampered and washed more times than I can imagine and waxed. And, I mean, the first day we had it, it was 3 hours old. We were out, we washed it, and I waxed the whole truck. This truck has barely seen, I won't say never, but it's barely seized bad weather, wet weather, salt, corrosion, etc. There's a rust blister. You ever look at the back of, there's two vehicles I can say I see this on. Chevy Suburbans. And Ford Explorers, all right? Foolishly, I bought an Explorer, but it's a little different body style. The older body styles, the 08s, the 09s, that body style. You ever look at that body style Explorer? Next time you're at a traffic light and you pull up behind it, look at the little plastic panel that's above the license plate. It's going to have a crack on the left side. They all do it. I don't know why, but they all do it. They all crack on the left side. I don't know if it's because you push the tailgate down, and over time it just cracks the panel. But I see it on every one that I come across. My 04 Suburban has a problem where it's got a rust blister, a huge rust blister, around the push button in the back of the automatic door, the hatch. And it's raised the paint up to the point that it's I'm going to have to get it painted. The sad part is that if I open the hatch and I look underneath the edge where it sits against the body seal, it's all rusted there too. So I guarantee you the entire inside of the door is rotted. This is a car that, and I'm not kidding, if I washed it and brought it by, you wouldn't believe this truck is 16 years old. It's that shiny and clean. I loaned it to one of the children units the other week. I was servicing her car, and she had to go somewhere, and she went out to lunch somewhere, and the valet took the car keys, and he was just shy. He said to her, he goes, boy, we never see 04 Suburbans that look like this. He was a mechanic during the day. She was out at night, and he said, it's really nice. He goes, we just like these old body styles, and it's just so refreshing to see something in this kind of shape because it's got 64,000 miles on it. But point becomes, General Motors, I don't know, like, what did I do wrong? Is it, you know, the hatch is just rusting and falling away. It's withering into nothing. And yet I see other Chevrolet Suburbans and the like, Trailblazers. They all seem to do it. Do I condemn GM? I don't think you can. I don't think you can. You know, I think it happens. I think it's things beyond their control, and I think their argument of it's 16 years old. Would I like it not to have happened? Yeah, great. I'd like to be 18 again, too. That's not going to happen either. But it's just, you know, bad things happen to good vehicles, whether the frames rot out, the back hatches rot out, the spoiler tab cracks. And you just hope that you get a vehicle that, you know, is going to be a good one in other areas, because everything has its problem, and that's part of this conversation, too. Everything has its failures, and if you think every vehicle is going to be perfect forever, then it's not a car. And it just doesn't work like that. So let's do a quick piece of email, and then we'll pull over and take the pause. Hey, Ron, couple of issues with anti-seize. I like the way, and this is from Nathan. I love the way Nathan wrote this. It's like a scientific explanation of what goes bad with anti-seize. I've been talking about it a little bit the past couple of weeks. Foremost is that regardless of formulation, it alters the coefficient of friction. This is a fancy way of saying how it affects things sliding together between the two metal threaded surfaces. Basically, anti-seize acts of any sort will end up functioning incidentally as a lubricant between these surfaces. The classic silver anti-seize, usually made of a mixture of particles of glass and metal suspended in a heavy grease. A few drops of oil of any sort, grease, even thread-holding compounds, lock lactate, whose purpose is almost diametrically opposed to that of anti-seize, will serve to decrease the amount of torque required to achieve a given level of clamping force between surfaces. This is like being beat up by Webster's Dictionary, all right? This dramatically increases the risk of fastener or thread failure, as well as that of surface deformation. Brake rotors warp, which is commonly caused by over-tightening lug nuts. In an application such as a wheel or axle bearing, this over-tightening can cause early failures. Well, yeah, I know that. We don't like anti-seize on lug nuts. You know, let me pull over and take the pause. I'll finish this when I come back. I'm Ron Anini, and don't go away.
Whether it's a little red Corvette or a Yugo, you've come to the right place to get that car fixed. Ron Anini and the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Let's just finish up our email. I'm trying to do an email here from Nathan about anti-seize. Nathan goes on to point out, he says, an additional issue exists with anti-seize with classic silver. When the grease that serves as a carrier fluid dries, the tiny metallic and glass particles that are primarily working ingredients can get into the machinery. These particles are highly abrasive and cause serious damage. This issue can also cause ablation, A-B-L-A-T-I-O-N. I'm telling you, I'm getting beat up by Webster here, of threads, but this isn't likely except with low-quality fasteners or those too small to be likely to lock up. Yeah, I agree, Nathan. I think anti-seize has changed a lot. The formulation is different. I think that using it blind on vehicles today is a mistake. I think it's a case-by-case basis, and it depends on how the vehicle and where the vehicle is going that will determine how much of it I use. We used to put it, oh God, it's got to be 18 years since we last put anti-seize on lug nuts, especially on plow vehicles because of the change in formulation. And I agree. At times you think you do need anti-seize, but whatever happened, the formula did change. Ablation of threads. That one just got me. So I want to get to this one. This one's for Tim. Tim checking in. Ron, I pulled the engine on my 2000 Chevy Venture and resealed the heads and upper and lower intake. I also put in a new transmission. It's a 3400 engine. It runs but dies. It has a code P0102. Mass airflow low. I've checked powers and grounds. Reference voltage of 5 volts. Also put a used mass air and still won't run. Any ideas, Tim? Yeah, Tim, listen, if you're out there listening, if it runs but it won't idle, all right, sounds like we've got a vacuum leak somewhere. We've got something the computer can't compensate for. Now, ideally, this is something that I would love to take a smoke machine and put some smoke down the intake throat and look to see, do we have leaks anywhere? I don't think you're going to have an intake machine, you know, in your house. So let's try and do the next best thing. Let's get the vehicle to run, get it warm, let it start, and let's get a mechanic stethoscope. You're going to have to spend some money somewhere. You're going to have to buy something. And let's listen around. You know, does it sound like a hiss somewhere? Does it sound like we're losing vacuum, which is going to affect not only fuel trim, but also mass airflow sensor flow? If you look at fuel trim, warmed up, off idle, 1,500 RPM, where is it? If this has a decent-sized vacuum leak, and try and back the idle speed down lower so that you're, you know, close to the idle range, 800, 1,000 RPM as you can be. And, you know, start to pay attention to fuel trim. Where does fuel trim go? Take a look at it on a scan tool. Got to have a scan tool, brother. You know, what does that tell you? Where is it going? This sounds to me more like it's a vacuum leak than anything else. Something wasn't reassembled right. Now we've got to go through the pain of eliminating that to understand it. One last thing, make sure or stop and consider, boy, this would be a great case of a smoke test to be able to smoke this to see what this looks like. But, you know, let's start with basics first and kind of take it from there. You know, it's I don't think it's a sensor. You've proved that. Let's think outside the box. Where are we going to go? We've got low mass airflow. Do we have a crack in an intake duct? Is there a problem with any of the engine plumbing elsewhere before the mass air that it's creating this particular issue? 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Anian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Hey, tons of email coming in. Ron Anian, the Car Doctor. Let's see if we can clear up before we leave today. Hey, Ron, Happy New Year. I know this is not Berryman B12, but I thought you might want to know about this deal on Techron at half price from Advanced Auto Parts. I don't know if there are times you might prefer it. Micah from Maine. You know what, Micah? Yeah, listen, I think Techron's a decent fuel system cleaner. I really do. I don't think it's as good as Berryman. Okay, it doesn't matter the price. Maybe Advanced is selling it cheap because, you know, maybe there's a problem with, well, whatever. I don't want to get into that. You know, if the question is there times I might prefer Techron versus Berryman? No, not really. I think, you know, Berryman, I think Techron is more of a maintenance type of cleaner, where Berryman, to me, is a maintenance and problem solver, and I prefer to use Berryman regardless, just because it does a better job overall, and it's got some real good things in there. The HEST, the higher energy solvent technology, is what sets Berryman apart from other fuel system cleaners like Techron. You know, remember what I say, okay? It's, you know, fuel system cleaners are only as good as the company behind them and only as good as the engineering that make them. And I think Berryman right now is the leader of the pack. I think they've got the edge over everybody else. And they're constantly adapting and changing. And that's one of the things you've got to remember about Berryman, you know, is that the fuel that we're using today is different than the fuel that we were probably using 3 months ago, that we were using a year ago. And they've got to come up with different additives and different formulations of Berryman B12, as well as their other line of fuel system and, you know, cleaning products for around the car, around the shop. And, you know, that's what sets them apart. It's you're buying the engineering just as much as you're actually buying the physical product to allow it to adapt to changes of whatever it is it's working on. In Berryman's case, it's that of gasoline. Use the Berryman, Micah, regardless of the price. Remember, you get what you pay for. Folks over at Motorcraft are busy. I got this announcement that, and we talk about the PSN, and a lot of people say to me, hey, Ron, what's Motorcraft PSN? They don't really know. So, you know, Ford Motorcraft, Ford Parts Motorcraft, and Omni Parts, they've got something called the Professional Service Network, or PSN. The PSN from Ford Motorcraft and Omnicraft is all about service centers, independent repair shops that are using Ford Motorcraft or Omnicraft parts that, you know, have a bunch of things available to them, you know, to help them compete and provide a better repair experience. You know, they've now made some changes where they're going to help repair shops acquire Identifix and other information systems. They're going to provide discounts on, you know, repair shop software, on their Rotunda software, Dell computer discounts, you know, Hewlett-Packard discounts. All courtesy of the folks, and, you know, they're arranging this program, Ford Parts, Motorcraft, Omnicraft. And, you know, it comes back to they're really working hard to build a better independent repair shop, which you think about it, they're working hard to build a better independent repair shop experience for both the consumer and the repair shop, and make sure that that vehicle you drive, whether it's a Ford product or anything else, you know, out on the road, GM, Chrysler, Toyota, Honda, etc., you know, using Omnicraft. So I think it's a heck of a step forward for Ford in that they're continuing to expand the professional service of the PSN network. You know, more information at FordPSN.com, you know, to talk about it. Now they're creating a separate elite membership versus you know, a standard membership, so that as repair shops grow, they can take advantage of more programs. So we thank the guys from Ford PSN for that, FordPSN.com. Gee, I didn't get to my last email. I wanted to read this email from Michael about the 98 Sienna that called in. We were going to talk about you know, servicing it and some of his ideas. It's interesting. You talk to somebody from Texas, right away they tell you, hey, it's not a bad deal. Just put $3,000-$4,000 in the car, drive it another 200,000 miles. That's what we do down here Texas way. God bless the Texans, right? God bless Texas. I think that's the way that works. And until the next time, I want to remind each and every one of you that I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.